And in terms of external situations for keeping ordination, one is being near your teacher, okay, or one of your teachers, even if it isn't your primary teacher, living, you know, somewhere where you can learn the Dharma. A second one is living in a community. Yeah. We tend to be a little bit arrogant. Oh, I'm going to get ordained and then I'm going to go back and live in New York City. Right. And do what? Oh, go to work and get a job because, you know, I have to earn a living. I'm a Westerner. Nobody sponsors me. So I'm going to ordain on Friday, go back to my work on Monday. I have to put on lay clothes to go back to work and grow my hair out a little bit. And I'm still living in my flat with the computer and the television set. How long are you going to last as a monastic in that situation? Yeah, that's just wishful thinking with a tinge of arrogance on our part. Okay? We white crows need each other. Okay? And so it's very important, I think, to live together in a community. And specifically in a monastic community. Dharma centers are okay, but Dharma centers are geared towards lay people. And you're not going to get the training that you need as a monastic. Okay? So we have to form communities. Then you look around and you say, oh, but there's no community. Okay. Well, that's because the people who came before you didn't set them up. So what are you going to do? Be like them and not set it up for the people who come after you? No? So this was kind of, you know, in setting up Shravasti Abbey in the West, you know, it's like, okay, somebody's got to do it. And the same thing, you know, setting up a place here in Dharamsala. Somebody's got to do it. So we take it on. We do it. Do not wait for your Tibetan teachers to create the ideal learning situation for you. It's not going to happen. Okay. And I remember one time with His Holiness, it was a meeting in the early 90s of some Western Buddhist teachers with His Holiness. And he, in fact, said that to us. He said, don't wait for the Tibetans to you know, set up a perfect learning situation for you. You have to go out and set it up. And so we're born, you know, our karma, this lifetime, we are born, you know, from the countries that we're in, that we're from, with the situation that we're in. And so we have this incredible opportunity to help bring Dharma to people from our own cultures. And it's going to take a little bit of extra effort, but that's okay. It's okay. Because if we build strong communities this life, then next life, if we're born as Westerners, we're going to have a community to go live in. If we don't build communities this life, next life, same situation. Rerun. Okay? So we really need to come together and form communities and not wait for others to do it for us. Now, one important element in forming a community, and what's difficult initially in the West, forming communities, is you really need people with experience to help guide you. Okay? Because when you're a baby monastic, you really don't know what to do. Yeah. So it's hard sometimes as babies and toddlers to set up communities. But we try. But the best thing is, you know, to get some seniors there, yeah, who can help. And whether the seniors live with you or don't live with you, it's important to listen to advice, you know, and in a community to really help each other. Yeah, and this is one thing that we try and create at Shravasti Abbey is an attitude of, I call it transparency, okay, where we train our mind to be okay with who we are and to not try and hide things from other people. Okay? And to have that, to be that way, we need a great deal of self-acceptance, which I think is a very important quality for us in our Dharma practice. to accept ourselves, but at the same time in the future, to continue to practice so that we can change. But we really create, we try and create an atmosphere where we can talk about what's going on inside of us. Because I know my first, I don't know how long, as a monastic, I was living in communities, but we were all trying to be very good monastics. And we only wanted to listen to the instruction of our teacher. We didn't want any of our fellow monks and nuns telling us what to do. And we also didn't want to really reveal what was going on inside. You know, because if I talked about what was really going on inside, then everybody would know what a horrible nun I was. You know, how my mind is just full of this stuff. So I can't let anybody know that. I have to look good. So keeping everything inside here, yeah, doesn't work. It doesn't work. Yeah. And so really at the Abbey, you know, we try, you know, at mealtime especially or tea time, just to talk about what's going on inside of us. Yeah. And we really emphasize how our life together as a community is part of our practice. How our life together as a community is part of our training. Okay? So problems come up between people. I know this is also one of the questions on this list. But problems come up between people. That's natural. Okay? Of course problems are going to come up. We're sentient beings. Okay? But this, having different opinions, okay, doesn't mean we have to be angry at each other. Yeah, that's the main thing to remember. We can have different opinions. It doesn't mean we have to be angry. We get angry when we identify with our opinions. When my opinion becomes me, then if you don't like my opinion, it means you don't like me. Then, I'm not going to stand for that. But if we remember our opinions are just opinions and don't identify them, some people like, they don't like, you know, we're okay. We're okay. That. And then, you know, even if something's coming up for us, even if we are identifying with our opinions, as we see that, then being able to say that to everybody in the group, you know, oh, everybody, today I was kind of in a bad mood and I was a little bit rude to people and I'm sorry about that because I was really stuck in one of my opinions. Yeah, and then everybody goes, oh, you know what? I was stuck in mine too. Yeah. And we come to learn to be able to talk about what's going on in ourselves with a great deal of self-acceptance without fear, you know. And I think that's very, very healthy. And then we really, really can help each other on the path. And I've seen in our community in the States, two of the people who've been there, you know, quite a long time. Our community is only 3 years old, so, you know, a long time is relative. But they really changed. I mean, there was one woman who came who, you know, had a lot of abuse when she was a child and came in just with so much negative self-talk. You know, and anger towards the world because of things that had happened. And during our last winter retreat when we were having our Q&A sessions, I was listening to what she was saying and I'm going, oh my goodness, you know, this is unbelievable. Yeah? Because she was beginning to identify those things and let them go. And she was able to share that with the rest of the community as it was happening. And when she gets stuck in it still, she's also able to let the rest of us know that. Okay? And so similarly, you know, all of us living together in a community, we all go through different things. And so we kind of let each other know what's going on. Yeah? And in that way, we're able to develop some compassion for each other. Yeah. We're in the middle of building. Well, we haven't started our building yet. We have a house to live in, but we have some building to do. That entails working with architects and contractors and engineers. This is my real Dharma practice, I tell you. Yeah, because before I ordained, I never owned anything. I never owned a car, never owned a house. Yeah, really, I didn't own anything. And here I am looking, trying to build a $2.5 million building. And where are the funds going to come from? You know, where's the design going to come from? I've never worked with an architect. I don't know anything about engineering. Yeah, but this is my practice. Okay, so once in a while, if the stuff gets too bad, I just get a little grumpy. Okay, but I tell the other people, and you know, they perfectly understand. And so for me, it's really nice living with other people who, when I say, you know, I'm going a little bit nuts with the architect today, can say, that's okay, we understand. And then in 5 minutes, whatever I'm feeling is gone. Okay? So this thing of, you know, being able to say what's happening with us and then giving other people the opportunity to be compassionate and understanding in return is such a valuable thing that we as Sangha can give to each other. Okay? Because in order to keep our ordination for a long period of time, you know, there has to be a certain sense of belonging, a certain sense of connectedness with other human beings. And so we have to make an effort to create that. Because it's very easy in, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, we, you know, especially where here in the Galupa tradition, you know, with all the great treatises and great texts and, you know, the 4 of that and the 5 of this and the 17 of the other thing that relate to the 32 of this, and that divides into 4 subdivisions, and the first one has 8 factors, and, you know, and I mean, we can really get into our studies, and studies are incredibly valuable, very valuable, okay? But we have to make sure that while we're studying, that we practice. And that while we're studying, we apply what we're learning to what's going on in our very own mind so that we can keep a happy mind. If we just sit there and we're like crunching the books, okay, you know, memorizing this and studying that, you know, but we're out of touch with what's going on in our own heart, we're not going to last. Okay. We have to be really in touch with what's going on. And that's what I mean about being in touch, using the Dharma to help us with our own problems, talking with other people about what's going on, giving support to our Dharma friends when they're going through stuff. Yeah. That's kind of the basis. Because in my experience, you know, the people who are able to keep their ordination for a long period of time, have that long-term motivation, and find a way to deal with what's going on inside. Some people deal with it well, some people don't, but they find some way to deal with it. Best is to deal with it well. But we all go through periods of loneliness, you know. And I would say that the main thing that makes people disrobe is either a lot of sexual desire or loneliness. Okay, it's the precept about celibacy that's the most difficult thing to keep. Okay, nobody says, "Oh, I'm going to give back my ordination because I want to go out and kill somebody." You know, nobody says, "Oh, I can't be a monk or nun any longer because I'm going to go rob a bank." Yeah. Nobody says, "I'm fed up being ordained because I want to lie about my attainments." You know? So it's not those three precepts that are the challenge, you know. The big one is the celibacy precept. And with the celibacy precept, it's not just physical celibacy. You know, it's not just jumping in bed and, you know, having a climax, and okay, that's done, because, you know, then you got to do it again and again and again, because sexual desire just keeps building up, you know. So it's not just the physical thing. Some people may have more trouble with the physical thing. Other people, it's the emotional one. Yeah. I want somebody special in my life. I want to be somebody special to someone else. I want somebody who's always there for me, who understands me, who loves me more than they love everybody else. Because somehow, you know, I need that. I don't really believe in myself. You know, I need somebody else to love me so that I know that I'm a good person. You know, or, you know, it could be that. Or it could be I'm really lonely. I have all this stuff going on inside, and everybody's only talking about the four of this and the seven of that. No, I can't talk to anybody about, you know, this doubt I'm having inside, or this restlessness inside, or this loneliness inside. You know, so then we just get more lonely and we sit there and stew in it. Okay, so it's, you know, around sex is this whole thing of emotional security. Yeah, and for some of us, that's the main thing. You know, it's emotional security, feeling loved, feeling special, having somebody there for you. So for some people, it's fitting in with the rest of society. You know, everybody in my family, everybody where I came from, is in a relationship. I'm the only one who's not in a relationship. You know, some people grew up in families where, well, most of us, I would say, grew up in families where there was the expectation that you fall in love and get married. Not the expectation. Okay? Then, okay, for a while it's fine, we don't get married, but then it's like that, there's that conditioning and thought, oh, but everybody else is in a relationship, what's wrong with me? Yeah. Or sometimes it's, I really want to have kids. Yeah, because kids really love you too, don't you? Don't they? You know, at least when they're young. When they're old, forget it. But when they're young, they need you. I need to feel needed. If I have a child and somebody needs me, then I'm valuable. Okay. So there's all, you know, there's so many different angles on it. Yeah? But they all come down to some kind of emotional neediness that we have inside to feel loved, to belong, to feel good about ourselves. And that's all tied up in the celibacy precept. Okay? So those emotional issues don't disappear when we get ordained. You know, they are the very thing that we have to work with. Yeah. We can't shut them in a corner and pretend that we're over all those things. Okay? And so, you know, we're social beings. We need other human beings. We need connectedness. Okay? And this is what the Sangha community is for. So we are connected with others. And it's not for the purpose of building one special relationship with one Sangha member in the community. It's not like finding my best friend in the Sangha community and then we're like this, you know? But it's like learning to open up and trust the entire community. You know? And it takes some time. But giving that a chance. And there might be some people that we resonate more with than others, and so we might seek more advice from those people, and that's fine. But, you know, to try and avoid forming, you know, the one best friend in the Sangha. Yeah. Okay. But to recognize that we are social creatures and we need to talk about what's going on inside. We need to have connection with others. We can't be up in our head all the time. Okay? But it's about how to have healthy relationships. You know, relationships that are based on practice instead of relationships based on our emotional clinging. Okay? And I think just, you know, to admit that there are these needs inside of us. You know? They're there. Okay. But we learn to work with them in a healthy way. And And then, you know, when our mind gets obsessive about something, then we know, okay, this is too much here. Yeah, what is my mind obsessed about? Is it about the sex? Is it about being loved? Is it about, you know, I want somebody, you know, okay, I want somebody to love me. Okay, what's that all about? Okay. Well, I want somebody to tell me I'm wonderful. I want somebody to say, you're so wonderful. You're so talented. You're so intelligent. Okay. You're so good looking. You're so this. You're so that. You're the best one. You know? I mean, we like that, don't we? Okay? So to say, yeah, that's what I want somebody to say they love me and to tell me how wonderful I am. And then you go, okay, which one of the eight worldly concerns is that? Yeah? Eight worldly concern about attachment to praise and approval, isn't it? Yeah? It's not just praise and approval. I want my boss or my teacher to praise me. I want one special person to think I'm the most wonderful one. Yeah? And so it's definitely, that's that eight worldly dharma. There it is. You know? I'm not a Buddha yet. Okay? Well, what are the antidotes to the eight worldly dharmas of, you know, wanting praise and approval and everything else? What I do is I ask myself, well, even if I get those, what good is it going to do me? Is it really going to solve the problem? And then, you know, I remember my past relationships. I had lots of people tell me I was wonderful and special. But it didn't solve the basic feeling of neediness and loneliness inside. That's not how it got, you know, it still remained there no matter how many people told me they loved me. So what's that feeling of neediness all about? You know, what's going on there? And so you just kind of learn and you do your research on what's going on inside. What's that neediness about? I want somebody to love me. Well, what about me loving somebody else? Oh, yeah. You know? Because that loneliness is all about me, isn't it? I want somebody to love me. Well, is that a good foundation? Even if I were to start a relationship, that's not a very good foundation to start any relationship on, is I need somebody to love me. That's a recipe for disaster if you enter a relationship with that motivation. Yeah? Because it's full of expectations. So what does the Dharma teach? Well, the Dharma teaches us to open our hearts equally to others and extend love to them. So not to one special person, but maybe I'm feeling so lonely inside because I'm not loving anybody. Because I'm all locked up in myself. So maybe I need to open my eyes and look at what's going on with other people and start being kind to them, start smiling at them. Not because I want something from them, not because I want them to be my one and only or I want to be their one and only, but simply as a manifestation of my own inner kindness towards sentient beings. And so then you go back and you start practicing metta, you know, loving kindness. And you start looking at the people around you and trying to be kind. And then all of a sudden you realize, wow, there's so many people here that I'm connected with. And then you don't feel lonely anymore. And you realize, oh, I'm connected with all these other people. I don't need to be the one and only to somebody else. So, we work with what's inside and we really, like, put the teachings on loving kindness into practice in our own life instead of just memorizing the types of loving kindness and 22 types of bodhicitta, you know. Sure, we memorize those, but then we try and, you know, put some of it into our own heart in this life in the way that we relate to the other people that we're living with. And as we do that, then that solves our own inner feeling of isolation and disconnectedness and loneliness. Okay? So, you know, maintaining our ordination over a long period of time really means taking the teachings into heart, you know? Really taking them, trying to transform our mind. And it really means being able to notice what's going on in our mind. And when you find garbage in your mind, another thing, when you find garbage in your mind, say, oh, good. Okay? Instead of saying, there's garbage in my mind, horrible. You know, which is what we usually do, and then we start putting ourselves down and we get depressed. Don't do that. Say, I found garbage in my mind. How wonderful. Okay? Now I see the garbage. Now I'm going to be able to clean it up. Before, that garbage was there and it was running my life and I didn't see it at all. I was totally blind. You know, that garbage was like a ring in my nose pulling me here and there and there and there. My attachment or my anger, my jealousy, my pride. There's the ring in my nose, like with the donkeys, you know? They pull and, you know, I just was just following that garbage mind as if it were Buddha, you know? But now I see that's garbage mind. How wonderful that I've seen my garbage, because now I can clean it up. Because it's like cleaning a room. If you can't see the dirt in the room, how are you going to clean the room? The first step in seeing, in cleaning the room is seeing where the dirt is. Okay? Yeah. So when we find the dirt in our own mind, just say, great, this is good, now I'm seeing it. Okay? Yeah. Nothing wrong. I mean, we're sentient beings. Of course we have garbage in our mind. How wonderful we found it. And then we slowly practice, start practicing the antidote. And what you'll find in your practice is, you know, there might be some, we all have our own peculiar issues, you know, or one defilement that might be stronger than the other ones. So you find you work with it, you know, and then it starts to, you know, you get a handle on it. At that point, when you're beginning to get a handle on one of your defilements, don't get complacent. Don't say, ah, good, now I've conquered that one. It's not bothering me anymore. Because as soon as we get complacent and think, I'm over that problem, whammy, it comes right back. You know, right out of left field, it like boings you. And you're going, whoa, wait a minute, I thought I was all over that one. Well, you know, we've been in samsara since beginningless time. It's gonna, you know, working with our mind is hard. We're not gonna uproot these things with, you know, in 1 month or 1 year or even 1 lifetime, you know. It's gonna take a while. So, you know, we work with it, we get a handle on it, it eases a bit, and then it comes back again and we work with it some more at a deeper and deeper level. And a few years later, it comes again, and we work at it deeper and deeper. Because if we, you know, if we hang in there with our practice and with our ordination, then we get, then our Dharma tools begin to become more firm, and they become part of us, and so we're able to work with these things at a deeper and deeper level as we continue on. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I've really seen, you know, my own practice. The moment I say, oh, I'm over that problem, that's when it really hits me. Yeah. So don't get proud in your practice. Actually, I think that's one of a very good advice that I received as a young nun. I was talking with one monk, and he was actually later became the abbot of one of the monasteries in the south. At that time he wasn't. But he was saying how a lot of the monks don't have a monastic mind. And, you know, it's really important to cultivate a monastic mind. And so I said, what's a monastic mind? Because, you know, I want to cultivate one. And one of the big attributes of a monastic mind is humility. Okay. Humility does not mean low self-esteem. Humility and low self-esteem are two completely different ballgames. Okay. We're able to have humility or we're able to be humble because we have self-confidence. Okay. When we don't have confidence in ourselves, That's when we get arrogant, because that's when we're trying to prove ourselves to somebody else, when we don't have confidence in ourselves. When we have confidence in ourselves, when we're okay with who we are, we don't need to prove ourselves to anybody else. You know? Then we can kind of be humble. Okay. So it's interesting, isn't it, that self-confidence and humility go together? So I think that that quality of humility is important. And, you know, as I was saying before, even when we're working with our mind to, you know, and as you practice, things get a little bit better. But we don't get arrogant about it. We remember, I'm not yet even on the practice of accumulation. So there's nothing to be proud about. Okay? I gotta hang in there, keep on practicing, but I know I'm doing the right thing. So I just keep on going with it. And then, you know, as you're practicing, different things come up. Like I said, you know, you might have one issue that keeps coming up in different forms, or one affliction. It might be anger, it might be attachment or jealousy, pride, you know, that keeps on coming up in different forms. And then also, you sometimes will find in our practice things that we thought we didn't have such a big problem with. Then all of a sudden, we'll look and we'll say, oh, I actually have a lot of that affliction. Yeah. And then again, how good that I found that. Yeah. I found out that I actually have a lot of doubt. I thought for a long time I didn't have much doubt. I actually do. How good that I found that. Okay. Now I can start applying the